We've been looking at the doctrine of the church. A couple weeks ago, we looked at the woman's place in the church. Tonight, I would like to look at the subject of the woman's head covering. And we'll probably go a little bit later than we normally do. This isn't something I want to do in 2 weeks, but we'll cover it as best as we can. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, begin reading with verse 3, reading through verse 16. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head, which is Christ. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head, which is the man. For that is even all one. We've been looking at the doctrine of the church. A couple weeks ago, we looked at the woman's place in the church. Tonight, I would like to look at the subject of the woman's head covering. And we'll probably go a little bit later than we normally do. This isn't something I want to do in 2 weeks, but we'll cover it as best as we can. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, begin reading with verse 3, reading through verse 16. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head, which is Christ. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head, which is the man. For that is even all one, as if she were shaven. For, or in addition to this, if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God. But the woman is the glory of the man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause, that is going back to what was said in verse 8 and 9, ought the woman to have power or authority on her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. In other words, they both need one another. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Judge in yourselves, is it comely or is it becoming that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. Of course, much debate in our circle of fellowship has been waged over what Paul meant by a head covering. And I will say this, with all the debate over what constitutes a proper head covering, many times the devil is victorious because with all the debate, the most important thing has been overlooked. And that, of course, is the subject of headship. That's what Paul is addressing here in this chapter. Now, the head covering that Paul speaks of represents the woman being in her proper place. It represents God's order of the sexes. We see the thing represented, of course, is always more important than that which represents it. That doesn't mean that the head covering is not important. I've heard many say, well, it really doesn't matter. Well, if it didn't matter, it wouldn't be in scriptures. It does matter. It does matter. Others have said, well, it's really not important. Well, if it wasn't important, Paul would not have devoted these verses to it. The Spirit of God would not have led Paul to write this. So we must not fall into that trap in believing that it doesn't matter, because it does matter. And we must not fall into the trap of thinking, well, it's really not important, because it is. It, of course, is not the most important thing. There are degrees of importance on many things in the Scriptures. It's not something that we ought to break fellowship over. But we want to look at this tonight. But in verse 3, Paul states God's order of headship. And the principle of, and this is the principle of the head covering. God's order of headship. And I think by just remembering what Paul is speaking of here in these first few verses, he's talking about the distinction of the sexes. The sexes must be kept distinct from one another. They're not to be the same. They're to be kept separate. That's true in society. That is also true when it comes to the Lord's church. So the covering that Paul is speaking of represents God's stated order. It represents the distinction of the sexes. Therefore, again, it must be important. The most agree, again, that the purpose of the covering is to show or to represent the woman's place to her husband's God-given authority. The disagreement comes to what constitutes the covering. What constitutes a head covering? Now, I believe in a head covering. I do not believe what a lot of people believe, but I do believe in a head covering. And as you read these verses, you have to. You believe in a head covering. Again, the debate is what constitutes a head covering. One thing we know for sure, whatever it is that constitutes it, men are not to have it, and women are. I mean, that's very plain. It is something that men are not to have, and something that women are to have. Now, I never do this, but I brought a couple booklets tonight that I want to read a few things out of. And the reason I brought these two booklets, I've got several, but the reason I brought these two is because they're the ones most referred to. They are considered the ones that are irrefutable. The one is called The Veiled Woman by Brother Milburn Cockrell, who now, of course, is with the Lord. The other one is called The Divine Order of the Sexes by C.D. Cole. But I want to read you in verse 7, or on page 7, on The Veiled Woman. Some say the covering commanded in these verses for a woman is her hair, which is given her for a covering. Others say Paul wrote about an Oriental custom, which is in no way binding on our modern day churches. Still others, like myself, not myself, but Brother Cockrell, are convinced that the Scriptures teach that a woman should wear a hat to the services of the church. And the reason I read that is he only presents three views. He presents the view of the hair being the covering. He presents the view that it was just a custom that is no longer in effect today. And he presents the view of the hat. Now, Brother C.D. Cole, in his little booklet, does the same thing. He presents those three views. And I do not believe that the head covering is any one of those three. So the first thing we want to do tonight is consider what the head covering is not. Consider what it is not. And I believe it's important. Paul was very precise in his writings. He always wrote in a very orderly fashion. He never in his writings goes off on a tangent. And these things are important to remember as we look at these verses. I believe Paul argues from, he uses a threefold argument. In verses 3 through 12, he argues from the standpoint of what the covering indicates. In verses 13 through 15, he argues from nature. Judge in yourselves, doth not even nature teach you? And which simply means that this is something that even if the Bible didn't say, you could know it by nature. You can know it by nature, which does away with the other things that we've talked about. Paul argues from custom in verse 16. So then again, keep in mind, Paul always writes in a logical, precise order. So let's look first of all at what the covering is not. I do not believe that hair in general is a covering. And almost everybody who writes a book on supporting the hat or the veil writes several pages to prove how that hair is not the covering. And I agree with that. But that's not the only other view. And they seem to miss that when they write their books. Again, most who do not believe that a hat or a scarf of some kind is a covering will contend that hair in general is a covering. It cannot be. It makes absolutely no sense. Would it not be absolutely ridiculous for Paul, for the Spirit of God to lead Paul to tell a church that was plagued by divisions, that was plagued by strife and all sorts of trouble, to make sure that their women wore their hair to church? Well, that's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous. Hair is not the covering. And again, all you have to do is substitute the word hair in the places where you see the words covered or uncovered. And when you do that, this view stands condemned. And I believe that's true of all the views that we need to interpret this way. Now, such a view, according to verse 4, notice, if you believe that just hair is the covering, every man praying or prophesied having his head covered. Well, if you believe that hair is the covering, what's that saying? Every man praying or prophesying, having hair on his head, dishonoreth his head. That means that all men who come into the house of God must be bald. I'm getting there. But that would simply mean that all men must be bald-headed. I mean, that's ridiculous. And again, these individuals who write these books for the scarf or the hat, they just pounce all over this thing. And they ought to. But again, that's not the only other view. In verse 7, we read, "For a man indeed ought not to cover his head." That is, a man indeed ought not to have hair, if you believe that just hair is the covering, for as much as he is the image and glory of God. But the woman is the glory of the man. And also such a view that just hair is the covering makes verses 5 and 6 absurd. Notice if we read it, verse 5 and 6. "But every woman that prayeth or prophesying with her head uncovered," in other words, bald-headed, "every woman praying or prophesying with no hair, dishonoreth her head. For that is even," or that is the same, as if she were shaven. Well, yeah. If she has no hair, that's the same as being shaven. Verse 6, for if the woman be not covered, that is, if she does not have hair, let her also, that is, in addition to, be shorn. Well, how can you shear her if she does not have hair? Doesn't fit. It's absolutely absurd. But if it be a shame for a woman to have no hair or shaven, let her be covered. So hair in general is not the covering. But I also believe that a hat or scarf of some kind is not a covering. I do not believe that that is what Paul is speaking of here. Again, keep in mind the distinction of the sexes. I'm sorry, it takes more than a hat or a scarf to distinguish between the sexes. It takes much more than a hat. It takes much more than a scarf. Now notice in verse 10. For this cause ought the woman, that is, because of her place of submission, she ought to have power, that is, a sign or symbol of authority, or of her submission to authority, on her head. Now, everyone agrees who's written books that the word for power is the Greek word exousia, and simply means authority. But those who believe that a woman ought to wear a hat or a scarf of some kind assume an awful lot when they, and I've had men do this. They'll say, look at verse 10, Brother Dan, it says it right there. To have power on her head, that's a hat or a scarf. I'm sorry. I do not see hat or scarf in that word power. And you've got to assume an awful lot to make that word power mean a hat or a scarf of some kind. You're assuming an awful lot. Notice, and that's exactly what they do. In the veiled woman again, it says, the word for power in the Greek text is exousia, which means authority. It seems to me that the sign is used for the thing itself in this verse. The hat on the woman's head. Right away he jumps to that assumption that the word power means a hat. The hat on a woman's head is the symbol of the authority that the man with the uncovered head, that the man with the uncovered head has over her. She must wear on her head the symbol of the authority under which she has been placed by God. Now notice, it goes on in verse 10. The woman is to cover her head, and one of the reasons is because of the angels. The angels, of course, are present when we assemble together. Then notice what Brother Cockrell says. It says, these celestial spirits delight in orderly subordination of the several ranks among themselves. They are shocked and offended by seeing a woman coming to church without the symbol. He's already said what the symbol is, a hat or a scarf. The angels are offended. They are offended and they are shocked when a woman comes into church without a hat or a scarf on. Then he goes on to say, a Christian woman ought to avoid offending these elect angels because she requires their protection more than even the man being, her being the weaker sex. By offending the angels, she may forfeit their protection. Do you see what he's saying? By her not wearing a hat or a scarf, she may forfeit the protection of the angels. That's ridiculous. Amen. That makes no sense. Amen. And make herself liable to an attack from the demons. Well, that's a mouthful there. Now you've really opened it up. If she doesn't wear a hat or scarf, she is wide open to attack of demons. Now, that's serious business. Then notice he goes on and he says, there is one thing that I'm sure of from this passage. Satan hates to see a woman with her head covered in church. The symbol on her head shows to even Satan she is no rebel against God like he is. Now, what's that saying? What's that saying is, if you do not wear a hat or scarf in church, you are a rebel just like Satan was against God. Now, these same individuals, in fact, he says it in the beginning of his book, that it is not his intention to make this an object of fellowship. He says, I have never made the head covering for woman in a church a test of fellowship, nor do I have any plans in the future of doing so. I know that some of my brethren are honest in their contention that the hair, there again, you can't get away from it, the hair is the head covering for women. I respect their views. I will never laugh nor make fun of them for their sentiments. I can only hope and pray that they shall be as charitable toward me. If we must differ in some points of doctrine, then let us do it in love, that men may know that we are Christ's disciples. Now, he ought to make it a test of fellowship. If you believe that someone is as much rebellion as Satan was against God, you ought to make it a test of fellowship. And if you believe that that opens them wide open for the demons, you ought to make that a test of fellowship. I'm saying anyone who believes what's in this book ought to separate from us.
That's right.
They ought to. They ought to separate from us if they really believe this. And most of them do, because they will refer to this book over and over and over again. Brother Dan, haven't you read Brother Cockrell's book? Yes, I have. And you ought to separate from me if you believe what is in this book. Now, those who believe in some sort of hat or scarf for the covering, they'll say, of course, they base it all on, they will say that they will contend that there are two coverings spoken of here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And they base this upon verse 6 and upon verse 15. And their argument is very, very weak at best. They contend that because two different Greek words are used for the word covering in verse 6 and in verse 15, therefore, everybody must know that Paul is speaking of two coverings. A natural covering and a covering that she would put over the natural covering. The natural covering is in verse 15. This is what they say. But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering, or her hair is given her for a natural covering. Well, a girl that is born, it does not naturally have long hair. It's not naturally long. You got to let it grow before it gets long. Verse 6 is the artificial covering, they contend. For if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. In other words, if the woman refuses to wear a scarf or hat to church, let her be shaven. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, and the word shorn means sheared, shaven means to shave as a man would with a razor, let her be covered, or let her wear a hat or a scarf to church. Well, it seems to me that if she is shaven, she ought to wear a hat. She ought to wear a scarf. But of course, they say because these two different Greek words, everybody with any sense at all must know that this is talking about two different coverings. Well, do we not, in the English language, use several different words to represent the same thing? I mean, if that's all you've got to base your argument on, you don't have much. Because we use different words to represent the same thing all the time. And Greek does, and the Greek is the same way. But what they really need to do, instead of getting all hung up on the two different Greek words, they need to look a little further. And they can do that by just getting a concordance. But they need to look a little further into what these words mean. First of all, in verse 15, where it says, her long hair is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. The word there is parabluos, and it means something cast around. Something cast around her head. In the context, it's talking about long hair. But if a woman have long hair, it goes back to long hair, is a covering or is a cast around. That answers the question. How long is long? You've got to be able to cast it around. That's how long is long. The very word tells us that. So it's something that can be cast around. They'll say, now that's her natural covering. But it's not her natural covering. She's not born with that covering. It would be her natural covering if she was born with it. So again, and then in verse 6, or they'll say in verse 15, some have even said that the covering of verse 15, in fact, C.D. Cole says it in his book, the covering in verse 15 is a word that means it cannot be taken off. Then let me ask a question. If it cannot be taken off, if that long hair cannot be taken off, how in the world can it be shorn or sheared in verse 6? Anybody knows hair can be taken off. All you got to do is cut it. And when you cut it, you are taking it off. Now, in verse 6, the phrase, for if the woman be not covered, it's a different Greek word for covered. It is the word katakalupto. But what is important here is it is third person singular, present tense, indicative mood, passive voice. That's of the utmost importance. The phrase, let her be covered, is also third person singular, present tense, passive voice. But instead of indicative mood, it is imperative mood, indicating a command rather than, again, the indicative mood. Now, the words covered in verse 6 are passive voice, which means the subject is being acted upon by an outside agent. When a woman puts a hat or a scarf on, she is not being acted upon by an outside agent. That's the tense of the word here in verse 6. The present tense passive voice pictures continuous action received by the subject in present time. In other words, the woman's head covering is not something she puts on herself, but something that is put on her by God. And that coincides with verse 15. For her hair, referring back to her long hair, is given her for a head covering, or for a covering. If the head covering was a hat, then the verb voice would have been active voice. It's something that she does consciously every time she comes into the house of God. Now, there are several now, and I would tend to agree, that will say, well, a woman is not just to be covered in the church services. She should be covered everywhere. Amen. It really presents a problem to those who believe in a hat or scarf. Because you know what that means? That means a man had better never wear a hat. That's what it means. Because the man is not to be covered, and the woman is to be covered. And there are some of our brethren who are now starting to practice that their wives will wear the scarf or the veil all the time, or the hat all the time. Fine, that's okay if you believe that. But you need to be consistent, because the man is not to be covered, and therefore he should never wear a hat of any kind. Of any kind. Now, those who believe in some sort of hat or scarf as a covering will say, well, the woman is to cover her glory. In verse 7, we read that the woman is the glory, that is the praise, the honor, the dignity of the man. That is, she was made for him, she was made after he was, she was taken from him. All her comeliness and loveliness and purity are to be an expression of man's honor and dignity. And the covering is to be expressive of that. If she is to cover her glory, then it needs to be covered. Then it needs to be all covered. A little hat, a little scarf, a little doily that you cannot see does not cover. Does not cover. Invisible nets, tiny balls, flimsy veils do not constitute a covering. Read you something else. This is amazing to me. Its size, talking about the hat, the scarf, or whatever she puts on her head, its size and color does not determine its effectiveness. That's like saying you go to bed with a blanket that big and it doesn't matter. Size certainly does speak of effectiveness if you're talking about covering. But here it says, size and color does not determine its effectiveness, providing it may be seen. Where do you get that in 1 Corinthians 11? It says it's to be covered. That's what it says. It doesn't say that it can be seen. In fact, if anything, it would say just the opposite of that. But it is to be a covering. Now, as a test, substitute the word hat or scarf for the words covered as you read through these verses. Notice in verse 4, and just see if it makes sense. See if it flows. Every man praying or prophesying wearing a hat dishonoreth his head. Verse 5, but every woman that prayeth or prophesieth without wearing a hat dishonoreth her head. For that is the same thing. If she does not have a hat or scarf on, that is the same thing as if she were shaven. Verse 5. Do you see any connection there between wearing a hat or not wearing a hat and being shaven? I don't. Goes on in verse 6. For if the woman does not wear a hat, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her wear a hat. Verse 7. For a man indeed ought not to wear a hat, for as much as he is the image and glory of God. And then here it is, verse 13. Judge in yourselves. That is, without scriptures, just judge by nature. Judge in yourselves, is it comely, is it fitting, is it becoming that a woman pray unto God without a hat? I'm sorry, nature is not going to teach anybody that. Nature is not going to teach you that a woman is to wear a hat and a man isn't. Nature won't teach you that. But Paul is arguing from nature. And then he goes on in verse 14, doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him. What in the world does that have to do with a woman wearing a hat? Nothing. Nothing. Paul is, if you believe that Paul is arguing for a woman to wear a hat to church, and he says, by the way, to prove my point, it's a shame for a man to have long hair. You'd think he's lost his mind. That makes no sense. It does not fit with Paul's arguments. Then, before we get into what we believe the covering is, I want to read a few more things. And this again, as I read these things, those who believe what this book says, they ought to withdraw fellowship from everybody who does not wear a hat, if they believe what is written on these pages. When a Christian woman refuses to wear her hat, she comes in the door in rebellion to God and His Word. How can a bareheaded woman worship God when in her very dress she has rejected His teaching on the symbol of divine order in the church? That's quite a statement. That's quite a statement. If she doesn't wear her hat, she has rejected God's order of the sexes. My point again is, what does a hat have to do with distinguishing between the sexes? Verse 24, for a woman to wear a head covering in church is to symbolically testify of her belief in the Genesis account of creation. Failure to wear a covering to public worship is a symbolic rejection of God's creation of the universe. Now, any preacher that, and I'm going to start asking, any preacher that believes that, that my wife, by not wearing a hat, has rejected the Genesis account of creation, they shouldn't have me preach. And they shouldn't have anybody else preach for them. And if they really believe that a woman, by not wearing her hat to church, has rejected the Genesis account of creation. That's quite a statement. That's quite a statement. Then notice something else. It is still a general custom among Christian men to remove their hats in church. Years ago, the women wore hats or bonnets to church in obedience to Scripture. Some of us are old enough to remember when it was so. Now the women, in most cases, have ceased to do this. Why? Has the Bible ceased to be binding? Those who have made the charge or the change are obligated to give their reasons for doing so. The plain truth is that this custom has been abandoned, that is, women wearing hats to church, because women's liberals, humanists, communists, and evolutionists. Now what's he done? Now he has said, if you're not wearing a hat to church, you women, you are in the same group of the women liberals, the humanists, the communists, and the evolutionists. Well, that coincides with what he already said. If you reject Genesis' account of creation, you are an evolutionist. Now again, if they believe this, and men in our fellowship, when you get in discussion with them, Brother Dan, have you read Brother Cockrell's book? As if that's the authority. Yes, I have read it. I've read it over and over and over because I can't believe what it says. And if you believe what it says, you shouldn't have anything to do with me. In fact, you're compromising by having anything to do with me, if you believe what's in this book. And he goes on and says that this makes women masculine. Can you imagine that? A woman is masculine because she doesn't wear a hat. And doth not even nature itself teach you that? That's ridiculous. Then notice something else. I don't mean to read you this whole book. This is his closing. He's talking to women who aren't wearing the hats. Do you refuse to do it because of what others will say? Or because you really wish to be like the man? You get that? If you don't wear your hat or scarf or bonnet to church, it's because you want to be like a man. Because your heart is not right with God. Why is it so hard for you to obey Christ? Why does His Word have no place in your heart? What they're saying is, Brother Dan, your wife, the Word of God has no place in her heart at all because she doesn't wear hats. If you believe that, again, you shouldn't have a thing to do with me. Nothing at all. I'm getting tired of people saying, we don't make this an object of contention, and we don't make it a test of fellowship. Well, they ought to. Seems to me if they don't and they believe this, they're a bunch of compromisers. They need to make a test of fellowship. If they need to do one of two things. Either come out and say, well, we don't go that far, or they need to begin to separate. But one, they need to do one of the two. Now, I have studied their arguments. In fact, I used to believe it. When I was first called to preach, was under a pastor who believed it, and I never questioned it. Sharon Warwick. And one time we went to a conference at Zora Baptist Church in the early 80s. A man stood up and preached on why a hat or scarf or a bonnet or a veil was the head covering. And as he was preaching, the Spirit of God told me what I believe today. The very message he was preaching had the very reverse effect upon me. Because at that moment, as he was preaching, for the first time, I really began to look at it. And I've read their books. I've probably got 25 of them at the house. They all basically say the same thing. Some go a little further than Brother Cockrell. Some have even said that if a woman doesn't wear a hat or scarf to church, she's no better than a prostitute. Now, that's quite a statement. That's quite a statement. It's not going to offend me if your wife wears a hat, but if you're going to call my wife a prostitute because she doesn't wear one, we've got a problem. Now we've got a problem. But we don't want to make it a test of fellowship. Well, they've already done that by making such ridiculous statements. So what constitutes the covering? Again, I do not believe the covering is simply hair. I also do not believe it's a hat. I don't believe it's a scarf. I believe it's long hair. Again, Paul used, we said he had a threefold argument from what it represents. But we want to concentrate in verses 13 through 15. He argues from nature. He argues from nature. Which is, again, like saying the head covering is a truth that you would know, even if it were not in the Word of God, you would know it by nature. And as I've already said, as far as I know, nature has never taught anybody that a woman's wear a hat and a man isn't. Nature doesn't teach you that. But verse 13, it says, judge in yourselves. Is it comely? Is it becoming? Keep in mind, he's speaking of the distinction of the sexes, that a woman praying to God uncovered. I would say that would mean, is it comely, judging yourselves, is it becoming that a woman praying to God with short hair? The argument is, doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? Why is it a shame for a man to have long hair? Because he's not to have his head covered. And long hair covers the head. In fact, that word long hair means flowing down, or that which comes down upon the head. The reason it is a shame for a man to have long hair is because he is to pray to God with his head uncovered. It just makes sense to me. It makes no sense to say we want women to wear hats to church because it's a shame for men to have long hair. It doesn't make any sense. Paul's lost his mind in verse 14. He's gone off on some tangent in which he never does. Then he goes on and he says in verse 15, but if a woman... Now the word but means on the other hand. Now we're talking about the distinction of the sexes. And he says it's a shame for a man to have long hair, but or on the other hand, because they're to be distinct, they're to be different. If a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her. For her hair, what hair? Long hair is given her by God for a covering. And again, the word means for a wraparound. When you can wrap around, when you can wrap your hair around, it's long enough to be a covering. That's when it's long enough. When you can wrap it around. These people all the time, they think they've got you. They think they've got, they're asking a question that no one can answer when they say, how long's long? Well, the word tells you how long. A wraparound, just like a veil. A veil is something that wraps around. Now, all through the Scriptures, we see that Jewish women had long hair. Doth not even nature itself teach it that it's a shame for a man to wear long hair? Notice in John chapter 11, John chapter 11 and verse 2, it was that Mary, which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped His feet with her hair. That's long hair. You cannot wipe His feet with short hair. That is long hair. John chapter 12, verse 3. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped His feet with her hair. She didn't have to take her hat off to do it either. It was long, and she wiped His feet. Song of Solomon, the bridegroom is describing the bride, and he said her hair, and I don't recommend you to say this to your wives, but it said her hair is like the hair of the goats flowing down from the mountain. That's long. That's long. That's long hair. All through Scriptures, we see that. And I would say that there's a much better chance of nature teaching you that a woman is to have long hair and a man is to have short hair than nature teaching you that a woman is to wear a hat and a man isn't. Now, which is nature going to teach? Nature teaches us that a woman is to have long hair and a man is to have short hair. That's why Paul uses the argument of nature. So you can, again, go through these verses and put long hair in the place of covering and see if it makes sense. Every man praying or prophesying having long hair dishonoreth his head. But, on the other hand, every woman that prayeth or prophesying with her hair cut short dishonoreth her head. For that is even all one as if she were shaven. For if the woman does not wear long hair, let her also be short. That is, if she's going to wear it short, let her go the next step and shear it as a sheep or cut it as close as a man would a razor upon his face. That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. Now, Brother Cockrell uses the argument here, and I will give him credit. He's the only one that I have ever read that tries to refute long hair being the covering. He gives about three sentences. And what he says here is, if she doesn't have long hair, then verse 6 doesn't make sense because it says, if her hair is not long, let her be shorn. Well, it makes perfect sense. If she's got short hair, let her go the next step and just cut it all off. That's what it's saying. That's what it's saying. And then he uses his final argument in this. A heyday in this one, because men who believe that long hair is the covering, or they may believe that just hair in general is the covering, they come to verse 16, and I tell you what, It's just unbelievable. And it gives these guys writing books, which I ought to do one of these days, it gives these guys just pages to write by what men will say about verse 16. This is Paul's final argument. He says, "But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God." And I've heard men, many men, argue, yes, I can see there's two coverings there. Paul spent 13 verses writing on it, and then in verse 16 he said, by the way, just forget everything I said, don't matter. That's ridiculous. And you know the argument these guys use? If that doesn't matter, then why does the Lord's Supper matter in the following verses? They got a good point. People that have to revert to arguments like that, I just wish they wouldn't say anything. It does not say, verse 16 is not saying, Paul is not saying, by the way, everything that I've written on this subject, just forget about it. It doesn't really matter. He's not saying that at all. Spirit of God would not lead him to do so. I believe what he's saying is, if anyone contends for women to pray uncovered and men to pray covered, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. What he's saying is, the word "we" is important. Who's he talking about? He's talking about the Jews. He says, no, he's talking about churches. No, he isn't. Because later on he says, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. He separates them. He's talking about the Jews. You read your Old Testament, and you will find in the book of Leviticus, and we'll not go there to save time, but and also in the book of Exodus, the priests wore what on their heads? Hats. They had hats. So Paul, it was the custom of the Jews for the men to wear hats and for the women not to. For the women to wear long hair. That was their custom. For we, the Jews, have no such custom that women should pray with their heads uncovered. Now that does not mean, because it doesn't fit custom. All you have to do is turn on the news today and it doesn't fit custom. It doesn't fit Jewish custom. It doesn't fit Leviticus 8 verse 9. It doesn't fit Leviticus 8 verse 13. It doesn't fit Leviticus 10 verse 6. It doesn't fit because there we're told men wore hats. Men wore hats. So it was their custom for men to wear hats. My point is, if the hat is the covering, then why did the men wear it? Because a man is to pray uncovered. But the covering is long hair. Long hair. So again, God, I believe these verses are pretty plain. I am not, I haven't in the past. Like I said, I've read their books, I've read their articles. I've read 10 Reasons Why a Woman Ought to Cover Her Head in Church. I've read all that. And it's the same thing over and over and over again. I've yet to read one single commentary. I've yet to read one single book written that says they believe that long hair is a covering. I haven't read that anywhere other than right here in the Word of God. Again, I'm not going to make a head covering, a test of fellowship. But I do get upset when statements are made that go just a little bit, that just go too far. That upsets me. And with those individuals that believe that, I can make it a test of fellowship. I mean, if they really believe that, I have no desire to be around them. If a man believes my wife's no better than a prostitute, I don't have any desire to be around them. If someone believes that my wife doesn't believe in Genesis account of creation and she's a communist and an evolutionist, I don't have any desire to be around them. None whatsoever. But again, the truth is, there are many that do make a test of fellowship. Several years ago, talking to one of the preachers in our fellowship, and he had just moved to another church. He said, "Brother Dan, it's wonderful. All the women in the church are right with the Lord. They've all got their hats on." And I said, "Brother, you mean to tell me that if they didn't have them on, they wouldn't be right with the Lord?" And he said, "That's exactly what I mean." That's quite a statement. Several years ago, a missionary came to our house. He said, "Brother Dan, do you have any questions for me at all? I'd be glad to answer them." And I said, "I have one. But I do not want to offend you. But this one question is the reason that I will not lead a church to support you. I do not understand how you can claim to believe wine in the Lord's Supper and go out from a church that is grape juice. I don't understand that, and I'd like for you to explain it to me." And his answer was, "Well, I'm not going to agree with any church on everything." I agree with that. "For example," he said, "you and I disagree on the head covering. And Brother Dan, I could never go out of a church that didn't believe in head covering." Brother, do you realize what you just said? You just said the head covering is more important than the Lord's Supper. "No, I didn't say that." That is exactly what he said. And I know for a fact some of them believe it. A lot of them believe that. Western Kentucky is very strong for hat and scarf. And I know for a fact some of them actually believe that the head covering, they will make the head covering more of a test of fellowship than they will the Lord's Supper. They'll have grape juices preach one after another, but they will hardly ever have a man preach that doesn't believe in a woman wearing a hat. Now that's pretty extreme. But God help us. Again, I hope we don't sound contentious. That's not our purpose. But I do believe what I believe. And I believe it because I believe the Lord has shown it to me. And I'm not going to call those names. I'm not going to call people names who wear the hat. It doesn't bother me if they wear a hat. It doesn't bother me in the least. It doesn't offend me one bit. But if you've got ridiculous comments to make, please don't. I'd just rather not hear them, because that changes my view of everything. Brother Mark, if you'd come, lead us in verse of song. Let's all stand. Brother Mark will lead us in singing.